The General Petroleum Corporation, marketers of mobile gas and mobile oil, presents I Was There. Meaux, France, 1937. Duke of Windsor married in historic ceremony.
I Was There.
Coffeeville, Kansas, 1892. Famous Dalton gang raids Coffeeville.
I Was There.
The Republic of Spain, 1936. Spain torn by civil war.
I Was There.
I Was There. Again, the marketers of Mobil Gas, America's favorite gasoline, and Mobil Oil, the largest selling motor oil in the world, present stories that have made headline history. Stories told by men and women who can say, I was there. And here to introduce tonight's guest is your host, the noted news reporter, Knox Manning.
Thank you and good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Again tonight, we're happy to present three men and women who've actually witnessed important events of our time. The happy, the tragic, the unforgettable events that make up the history of our age. But their stories are more than recitals of historical fact. They are vivid, detailed accounts of notable events. Accounts that could come only from those who can say, I was there. All over America this month, young couples are going to the altar for traditional June weddings. But perhaps the most significant and surely the most celebrated of all June weddings took place just 4 years ago this week. It was the wedding of the couple who made a million fictional romances seem pale by comparison with theirs. Of the man who said to all the world,
for my own part, I found it impossible to discharge my duty to the king as I would wish to do without the help and support of the woman I love. God bless you all. God save the king.
Edward VIII, King of England, Emperor of India, gave up a crown to marry the woman he loved. And here with us tonight is a gentleman who will never forget that historic ceremony, for he is a minister who risked his position and his future to perform it. Ladies and gentlemen, may I present the Reverend R. Anderson Jardine, formerly of Darlington, England.
Yes, Mr. Manning, I was there. And though I must confess, it was almost as much a surprise to me as it seems to be to the outside world. I'd never had the privilege of meeting His Highness, the Duke of Windsor, or the bride of his choice. But one morning in May of 1937, Mrs. Jardine and I were at breakfast in the vicarage of St. Paul's in Darlington.
Well, I would say it's unfair. It just isn't right.
Beg your pardon, my dear.
Hmm? Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to mumble, but this article in the newspaper has me downright angry. Listen, religious ceremony to be denied to Duke of Windsor.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear it. Although I must say I'm not surprised.
Well, I am. I should certainly think there would be at least one clergyman somewhere with the courage to risk possible censure, perform the ceremony. Why, there is it.
Anderson, what are you thinking?
You know what I'm thinking, my dear.
But a country vicar like you, why?
Very likely my offer will be declined, but I am going to offer to perform the ceremony. Though it costs me everything I have, I am going to offer.
Oh, there's one more letter, Your Highness. A most interesting one.
Yes, Ellen? What is it?
It's from the Reverend R. Anderson Jardine. Vicar of St. Paul's, Darlington.
Jardine? Jardine?
Oh, you don't know the good vicar, Your Highness. But he has offered to perform the ceremony at the wedding.
To perform the ceremony?
That's right.
I wonder if he's conscious of the criticism that would be heaped on him.
He must know what he's doing. What do you think, Your Highness?
I think the man has pluck. Get in touch with him immediately. And if he's still of a mind to do it, you may tell him we should be honored to have him officiate at the wedding.
calling the Reverend R. Anderson Jardine.
Well, this is Mr. Jardine.
Would you hold the wire, please? Go ahead, please.
Mr. Jardine?
Yes?
This is Allen, solicitor to His Royal Highness, the Duke of Windsor.
Oh, yes. Yes, I received your telegram, sir.
You haven't thought better of it and changed your mind.
On the contrary, I'm more anxious than ever to perform the ceremony.
Fully. Could you leave for London immediately?
I'll take the first train. I'll be there in the morning. Thank you so much for coming so quickly. You've made His Highness most happy.
Well, I'm glad of that. He has so much happiness due him.
You realize, of course, you're jeopardizing your position.
Really, Mr. Allen, your concern is appreciated, but my decision was well considered.
Good. Then is there any reason why we shouldn't start for France right away?
Not at all. I'm at your service.
Very good. Do you know something, Mr. Jardine? I'm feeling so delighted about this. It's almost as though I were the one to be married.
All the guests arrive?
Yes. Look out there. As the Baron and Baroness Eugene de Rothschild,
yes.
And the Duchess' good friends, Mr. and Mrs. Herman Rogers.
Oh, yes. I think I've seen that young man over there somewhere.
Of course. That's Randolph Churchill, son of Winston Churchill.
Oh, many important people here.
Yes, but even so, the wedding itself will be quite simple.
But, Alan, I found that oftentimes the simplest ceremonies are the most beautiful.
Well, the moment has come, Mr. Jardine. It's time for you to go to the altar.
Look, the doorway, His Highness.
Yes. It's the first time he's looked happy in months. And you have contributed much to that happiness. I salute you, Mr. Jardine.
For as much as Edward, Albert, Christian, George, Andrew, Patrick, David, and Bessie Wallace have consented together in holy wedlock, and have witnessed the same before God and His company, and thereto have given and pledged thereto, each to the other, and have declared the same by giving and receiving a ring, and by joining hands, I pronounce that they are man and wife, in the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Ghost.
With those very words, the Duke of Windsor and the woman he loved were man and wife. And one of the greatest romances of all times had come to its triumphant climax. I have often been asked if I would perform the ceremony again if I had to do it over. My answer to that question is yes, willingly and with the greatest of pleasure. Indeed, I am proud and honored to be able to say I was there.
Witness to quick and helpful service to humans as well as to cars, Eric Ostman of 5909 Dayton Avenue, Seattle, can say, I was there. Mr. Ostman had just moved into the neighborhood where Harold Gross operates a mobile gas service station at 60th and Finney Street, Seattle. As Mr. Gross was working about his service station one day, the phone bell rang, and a frantic voice at the other end of the line said,
I'm the new neighbor who was in for service yesterday. My child has just been scalded, and I don't know any doctor in this neighborhood. Can you help me out?
I surely can. Carry the child out to the curb, and I'll be there right away with my car. I'll drive you to a good doctor I know, and it's just a couple of blocks.
Thanks, old man, and please hurry.
In just about nothing flat, the frantic father and the suffering child were in the doctor's office, where prompt treatment prevented what might have been disfiguring scars on the child's face. Another instance of the prompt, neighborly, and effective service gladly rendered by mobile gas and mobile oil dealers, displaying the sign of the flying red horse.
Cleveland. I'm the new sheriff here. I ain't running from nobody.
You better change your mind, Sheriff, while you got time. I'd even hide that badge if I was you. Those boys ain't fooling. They're the Daltons.
The Daltons, Bob, Emmett, and Grant, ringleaders of the most feared band of desperados in the old Indian territory. Three men who respected but one law, the law of a six-gun. A true account of their lives holds more excitement and color than a chapter from a fiction novel. And our next guest tonight is a man well qualified to give us an eyewitness account of the Daltons' last ride, the famous raid on Coffeyville, Kansas. Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Jack Dalton.
Thank you, Mr. Manning. But don't you think we should have an explanation? You see, I wasn't one of the members of the Dalton gang myself. It was just Bob, Grant, and Emmett. I happened to be cousins of mine. They came from a good family, and their mother was one of the finest Christian women I ever knew. But the Daltons went wrong, and on the evening of October the 4th, 1892, they rode into the camp where I was working, where I thought they just happened to be riding through until after chow, when I heard them talking in the bunk.
Well, boys, this is the way we're going to do it. Now, let's all get this. Robbing two banks at once, the most important thing is timing it just right.
All right, let's have it, Bob.
Well, about 9:45, we'll all ride up to the hitching post out back of the Condon Bank. Emmett, you and me'll rock around in front. Grant?
Yeah?
You, Broadwell, and Dick will cross the street to the First National. When you get there, turn around and wait till I wave to you. That'll be the signal, so we'll be entering both banks at the same time.
You ought to time it so we came out together, too. That way there'll be no chance of somebody yelling before both jobs are done.
Right. Everybody got it straight?
Sounds good.
Yeah,
hey,
right. Hey, wait a minute. Looks like your cousin Jack's been listening.
Jackie, how long you been in here?
Oh, maybe just long enough.
Yeah? Well, I don't know how much you heard, kid. But if you're smart, you'll stay away from Coffeyville tomorrow.
Maybe that's for me to decide. Tomorrow's my day off.
Listen, you ride into Coffeyville after I told you not to, Jackie, and I'll kill you. Don't forget that. All right, boys, let's go.
Well, howdy there, Mr. Sinclair.
Oh, hello, Jack. Well, you've got another day off?
Yeah.
Well, you're in Coffeyville earlier than usual, ain't you? And you've been riding that horse pretty hard. What's your rush?
Oh, just anxious to get down here, that's all. Anything going on?
Was you expecting anything to be going on?
Well, no. Just wondered what the news was.
Well, come to think of it, I saw the Dalton boys riding into town a bit ago. They ain't planning any more of the mischief, is they?
I didn't even know they were here. Where'd they go?
Well, they was heading down toward center of town, down to the Condon Bank. Wait a minute. The bank.
Hey, where are you going with that gun?
I'm getting every man in Coffeyville. Them wild cousins of yours come down here for trouble, they're going to find it. The way they rode in here, no telling what's happening at the bank right now. I just hope we can get there in time. Boy, I guess we made it down here just about right. Now, don't anybody take his eyes off that bank. They're in there all right. There's their horses out back. I'll keep low, boy.
Hey, 200 we got here in time.
Yeah, I'll keep down. Yeah, back of the shed.
Yeah, okay. Hey, look. There's Bob and Emmett coming out now. Wonder where the other three are.
Well, must be still inside. They'll come out when you open fire on Emmett and Bob. All right, let them have it, boys. Head it off. Hey, run for the horses.
Jim and Red will get him. We got our hands full with Bob.
Hey, look, across the street.
The other three. They're coming out of the Condon. Come on, men.
Holy Jupiter. They're robbing both banks at once. Spread out. Keep firing.
Yeah, we better keep it off to the Daltons now.
Keep down. Keep down.
Hep, there he goes. He's trying to hide in that doorway.
I can't see him anymore.
Wait a minute. Wait a minute. Listen.
Hey, quit shooting.
Yeah, but it might be a trick.
I don't think so. Come on. Let's move up there.
Okay. Be careful. There's Grant. Dade.
Another one over here.
It's Dick Powers.
Yeah. There's Broadwell. That's three of them. I better go around to the horses.
Not too fast. Watch it. They're still empty. And Bob.
Yeah. Bob and Emmett. Yeah, there's your Daltons.
Jim, Ed, come out, everybody. We got them. We got them all.
Gosh, it don't seem possible.
Yeah, they tried once too often, that's all.
You know, I still don't see what kept Gratt and the others in the convent so long. They didn't come out till we started firing on Bob and Emmett. You'd think they'd have had this thing timed better.
Well, I can answer that. We just put a new time lock on the ball. They didn't know anything about it. The Daltons came in 3 minutes before the safe could be opened.
Yeah, that's what they waited for. That's what spoiled their timing.
Yeah. 3 minutes. And it cost them 5 lives.
Yes, that was the end of the famous Dalton gang. But strangely enough, though, everyone thought Emmett was dead. He finally recovered and was the one and only one of the gang to serve a penitentiary sentence. Incidentally, I had a hard time proving that I didn't have anything to do with the holdup. But they finally let me go. Otherwise, I am pretty sure I wouldn't be here tonight to say I was there.
Hey, Joe, do you ever go to a dog race?
Sure, lots of times.
Now, do you ever win?
Yeah, every time.
Hey, how do you know which dog to bet on?
I don't. I bet on the rabbit.
Ah, Joe, that's goofy. Now, you know you can't bet on that mechanical rabbit.
Sure, I know it. Yeah, I'm only kidding. But, Bill, wouldn't you think the dogs would get wise?
Yeah, you sure would. Because no matter how fast the dog may run, he'll never catch that rabbit.
You're right, you are, Bill. And that's something like the automobile engine trying to catch up with Mobil Oil. No matter how fast or how often they improve the automobile engine, constant improvements keep Mobil Oil out in front. And now the new improved Mobil Oil comes to you with 5 important features. It minimizes lacquer, gum, sludge, and carbon deposits. It affords greater protection against wear, scuffing, and corrosion. It lessens oil drag. It provides low oil and fuel consumption. And mark this point well. Because of a new ability to hold oxy products harmlessly suspended that would otherwise deposit on engine parts, improved Mobil Oil cleans while it lubricates. Drive into your Mobil Oil dealer displaying the sign of the flying red horse and have your crankcase filled with improved Mobil Oil, the largest selling motor oil in the world.
In 1936, the unrest of Spanish political life flared into open revolution, and Spain was plunged into a fierce and bloody civil war. Some said it was a grim dress rehearsal for more widespread wars to come, for Italy and Russia and Germany were sending men and machines to demonstrate the new tactics of a new kind of fighting. But for the men and women of Spain, the war was no mere practice maneuver, but a desperate, tragic struggle of interest against interest, faction against faction. And tonight, a young woman who was there to witness that struggle is here to tell us of her experiences. Ladies and gentlemen, the former star of Spanish motion pictures, now a Hollywood correspondent for prominent South American newspapers, Miss Cristina Montes.
Thank you. In July of 1936, I was in Madrid making a motion picture. My husband volunteered his services as an air observer to the Loyalist cause. And our two-year-old son Pedro was at our home on the island of Mallorca, of the east coast of Spain. And of course I went as soon as I could to see him. It was about 2 days after I arrived when Antonio, our maid, said,
"It's so good to have you home, Senorita. I worry when you're not here at Mallorca."
You must not worry, Antonia. Times like these, we must save our mental energies for thinking.
Yes, that is not always so easy.
Antonia, listen. Do you hear airplanes?
Santa Maria, Senorita. Has it come to bomb us?
There would be no reason for that. Mallorca is not held by either side. Go to the window and see if you can see them.
Yes, Senorita. But when the airplanes come, it means trouble.
Can you see them?
They are seaplanes, senorita. They're landing down in the harbor. What they are?
What is it, Antonia?
Italian. The planes are Italian. They are marked with the fascist emblem.
Italian?
The Italians, senorita. The Italians are coming.
Do you see them, Manuela?
There are thousands of them. Italians and Germans both. With guns and munitions. By sea and by air. Before anyone knew what is happening, the whole island is theirs.
Oh, senora. If they should learn about Don Ricardo. If they should learn your husband's life for the loyalists.
See, that's right.
You must leave Mallorca, senorita.
You must go quickly. These fascisti will know you're against
them. Manuela, Antonia, please. We are safer staying quietly here than running like fugitives. Besides, perhaps it is not too late to help save Mallorca.
What do you mean, senorita?
Manuela, my husband's radio. The one who used to talk with the mainland? Do you know how to operate it?
Senorita, you wouldn't dare.
Before this is over, we may have to do many things we do not dare. Tonight, we will send word of what has happened by radio.
That night, we sent the message. And then waited quietly, afraid to leave the estate for the next few days. But from friends who came to see us, we heard rumors of what was happening.
The rebels and the fascists control the whole island. They're searching out every loyalist sympathizer on Mallorca.
They have taken over Belvedere Castle and put electrified barbed wire around it and made it a prison.
Each night and morning, you can hear shots coming from Belvedere. Many go there. None ever come back.
You must get hold of yourself.
Senorita.
Nothing. Let me do the talking. If I am taken, get a boat. Any kind of a boat. You must get to my husband.
The Dona Cristina Montes de Ferry.
Why do you come into my house this way? You have no right.
Delencio. Ramez. Arinas. Search the place. You have a radio, Dona Montes?
Of course. We listen often.
We do not mean that kind of radio, senor. You have a transmitter?
Si. My husband used it for pleasure when he was here.
Why did you send the message to the loyalists?
The message?
Do not pretend.
I do not know what you're talking about.
Reports have been sent to the mainland. You sent them by that radio.
Senor, I am a woman. I know nothing about radios. But if I did, why should I send a message to the loyalists?
The radio is in upstairs room, Capitan. We will take it.
You're welcome to it, senor. If it's no use to me, take it and be so kind as to leave. I have to go and care for my son.
Si, Dona Montes de Ferry. We will leave now. But you will leave with us. You are a clever actress, senorita. But not quite clever enough.
Next, the prisoner.
The Dona Cristina Montes Ferrer.
Oh, Dona Cristina. Hey, we've been watching you. Have a guard, take her to Belvedere.
Senor, you cannot do this. I have done nothing, and I have a baby son to care
and
for.
And you also have a husband, have you not, senora?
Yes.
Let me read you from our record. Ricardo Pablo Ferrer, volunteered as loyalist flyer.
Oh, you know that.
See, si. You want more? Wireless message intercepted. Face to La Dona Montes Ferrer. You will go to Belvedere.
A moment later, a young rebel soldier began marching me up the road toward Belvedere. I knew that once those prison gates had closed behind me, I'd never come out again alive. I thought of my husband and my son, and I wondered what I could say to the guard that might make him take pity on me. But he was so young, hardly more than a boy, and being a soldier was almost like a game to him. I'd almost given up hope. And I remembered the deep religious sense of the Spanish people. Santa Maria, full of grace, pray for us sinners now and at the hour of our death.
What are you mumbling about?
Huh? I am praying. Am I to be denied the right to do that?
No. Pray if you will. But don't try any tricks.
Finally, then, intercede for this poor sinner. Save him from damnation of soul that must surely be the lot of him who leads an innocent woman to her death.
Move along, woman. Move along.
See, you need not prod me with a gun. Does it bother you so that I pray for you?
I say move along.
I'll go. Santa Maria, I plead for compassion on my tormentors. Have mercy, por Dios. Have mercy, they know not what they do. Blessed Virgin, I ask it. The hour of my death grows near. Save this boy from that awful torment of his soul. He has so long to live with the memory of what he has done.
Have you prayed enough? Why do you go on like that?
We will soon be at Belvedere.
Then pray for yourself. You're the one who will need prayers.
I need prayers. I have no guilt on my hands. It will be you. My death will be swift. But every hour of your life, you live with the memory of what you have done today.
Are you a fool, woman? Around these bends, Belvedere will be in view. Pray for yourself before it is too late.
Mercy upon you, Madre de Dios.
Pray for yourself!
He is so young, he has so long yet to suffer.
Silence! Silence! Run. Run. Do you hear me? Run.
What are you saying?
Por Dios, woman. I'm giving you a chance to escape. Run before I change my mind. Run for your life!
I ran as fast as I could to cross the hillside to our home. Antonia had brought a small boat, and that night, with my baby Pedro, we started out to sea. 3 days later, we were safe on the loyalist island of Ibiza. And when the war was over, I brought my son Pedro to America, where he could have safety and freedom. But I will never forget the terror of those days of the Spanish Civil War. I was there.
Mobil Gas, America's favorite gasoline, and Mobil Oil, the largest selling motor oil in the world, have presented eyewitness accounts of historic events, dramatized from the experiences of the people who stepped to our microphones in person to say, I was there. But now an important word from Knox Manning.
Would you like to appear as a guest on I Was There to tell of a headline event you have witnessed? If you've had any memorable experience, write to I Was There, Columbia Square, Hollywood, giving full details. If your story has the necessary dramatic qualities, you'll be invited to appear on this program. Meanwhile, be sure to join us again next Sunday night. Until then, on behalf of your Mobil Gas and Mobil Oil dealer, thank you and good night.
I Was There is edited by Everett Tomlinson and produced by Russ Johnson. Original music was composed and conducted by Wilbur Hatch. This is the Columbia Broadcasting System.